committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Jordan, have you looked at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move their approval.
Representative Jordan moves the minutes for February 15th, 2023. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Ayes have it. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we know the snow is coming, but we do have a quorum, so we are going to act. House File 1424, Representative Becker Finn, the 1854 Treaty Agreement funding. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. And I don't have that far to go, and I still want to go home. But so House File 1424 is pretty straightforward. I think I'm kind of bummed that we don't have more members here, because I think there's some important history here that folks could be educated about. But I will just say, so this essentially would carry out, there was an agreement that's already in statute, and this would carry out that agreement and actually make the payments to the tribes under that agreement. I think I do have testifiers who traveled to be here, and I want to make sure that they have time to testify. But I will just remind everybody that our treaties are the supreme law of the land that is in the Constitution, and should really dictate the level of importance and how we uphold those treaties in our actions now. So we'll turn it over to my testifiers. Chair Hansen.
Testimony? Chair Duchamp, Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, I got 300 miles to drive home.
I want to get him in here.
Anin Bujou, Robert Disha, Indigenous. My name is Robert Disha. I'm the chairman of the Grand Portage Band. My tribe is located at the tip of the Arrowhead of Minnesota along the Canadian border. HF 1424 would increase the base payment that is made to the Grand Portage and Boise Fort bands pursuant to a state tribal legal settlement. The amount was set in law in 1988 and has not been increased since that time. This settlement was the result of litigation between the tribe who signed the 1854 treaty and the state concerning the rights of tribal members to hunt and fish in the ceded territory free of state regulation. The state and the bands entered into a settlement agreement to resolve the loss, that lawsuit in 1988. In exchange for annual payments from the state, the band agreed to a specific limits on the exercise of hunting and fishing and gathering rights by band members in the ceded territory according to specific state requirements. The band established the 1854 Treaty Authority to administer the agreement. Since 1988, the Treaty Authority and the state have successfully co-regulated hunting, fishing, gathering activities in the ceded territory. HF 1424 is designated to address a significant oversight when the agreement was reached. There is no automatic inflator or COLA for the base payment. In 1988, the legislature appropriated $5 million for an annual base payment for the settlement. In 2023, that would be over $12,500,000. HF 1424 would reflect the true benefit of the bargain of the 1854 agreement. Thank you. Any questions?
Good job.
Members, any questions? Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Becker Finn, for bringing this forward, and thank you, Chairman, for making the drive down. It's a real honor to have you in our committee, and it's a pretty big deal. Representative Becker Finn, we talk a lot. I ask questions sometimes about treaty law, and then no one ever answers them. So I'm wondering if you can just give a little bit of an overview on why this committee should care about the 1854 treaty a little bit more.
Ooh, wow. Okay. I guess, and I know we have one of my federal Indian law classmates was here as well. So I think to sort of put this in perspective, if you think about this agreement, so our people as Ojibwe people were here first, and the fact that so this is a map of the 1854 treaty area. So if any of you all have ever traveled to Duluth, Cloquet, Virginia, Eveleth, Grand Portage, Grand Marais, Tofty, all of that land, the reason that you all are familiar with the cities that I just named is because of agreements like this and agreements that were made through treaties. The state of Minnesota does not exist without treaties. So really at the core, especially in this committee where we talk about natural resources and land, you know, setting aside that, you know, as an Anishinaabe person, the way that we conceive of land and wildlife might be different from yours, but at least standing on the same footing that we think it's worth protecting and it's important. You should care about the treaty because the treaty also gives you rights to be on this land. Especially if you have used that land, if you have been to the boundary waters, then you are also, as a non-native person, benefiting from that agreement. So what this bill does is upholding the other side of that agreement. Obviously, the tribes would not have agreed to all of this if they weren't getting something in return. This is part of the deal. This is part of the contract. And so, I mean, that's what a treaty is. A treaty is a contract, but it's a contract whose level of importance is up here, who we know in our legal system supersedes all the other laws. And so I thank you for the question because that's the heart of it, is really central to any of us as in the place that we now call Minnesota. So I thank you for the question, Representative Jordan.
Any other questions? Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Beckerfin, and to your testifier, thank you so much for driving. Hopefully you get to drive home soon. Chair Beckerfin, I had no idea about this, so this is, thank you for bringing this forward. And it seems only right to do this. I'm just curious, has this ever been put forth before the legislature before?
Representative Beckerfin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edelson, I mean, not in my time here. Representative Hansen has more institutional knowledge than me. That's how I'm going to say that. to my knowledge, we have not discussed this at this level, at least in my 7 years here.
My institutional knowledge, I do not remember a payment at all. So I don't know. I see DNRs here. Maybe they know if the answer to that. Commissioner Meyer, if you want to just come forward and answer the question.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. Well, the treaty was ratified by the United States Congress back in April 26, 1866. The memorandum of agreement that these basis of these payments are based on wasn't actually signed by all parties until 1988, and at that time it was ratified by the legislature as well. It does establish the payment processes, and there is an inflator based on the number of licenses sold each year to Boys Fort, Grand Portage, and it's tied back to the Leech Lake Agreement as well.
And I think the chairman actually had a point that I think is important to get on the record as well.
Chair.
I think one of the important facts about the 1854 treaty area is the original treaty was 6.2 million acres ceded to Grand Portage, Boys Fort, and Fond du Lac. At this time, there is less than 20% of that area left that we can utilize. So that's pretty significant loss of land for us.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Chair. And I will say that the reason those lands were lost was because of government policies that incentivized that happening. So I think the chance here for government, our state government, to do the right thing, you know, this is our opportunity here to try to do right by the original agreement.
Is there anyone else in the audience seeking to testify? Anyone else? Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. And I'm actually going to say the close to the same thing I just said in my hearing on chronic wasting disease in the Ag Committee. So I'm Leech Lake Ojibwe. I grew up in my home community in rural northern Minnesota, what we now call Minnesota. And I don't even know my first relatives who lived on that land and lived off that land. And I was always taught that we take care of the land and the water and the animals, and they take care of us. That's how we feed our families. That's how we continue to exist as Anishinaabe people. And so anything I can do to carry this forward to maybe try to right some wrongs, but also keeping in mind that our kids and grandkids are going to want to be able to also be in relation with our land and our water and our air and our animals as well, is very top of mind. So I just appreciate the committee's time. Again, wish more people were here to hear it, but hopefully some folks will go back and watch, and some folks online are learning some stuff too. So thank you for your support.
Thank you, Representative Beckerfin. I forgot to move the bill, so I will move the House File 1424 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And again, is there anyone in the audience? Seeing none, I will lay the bill over. Next up, House File 1332, Representative Elkins. I will move that House File 1332 be recommended to be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Elkins, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one part of about an eight-part Metropolitan Council housekeeping bill. So we're going to send this to state government where it will meet its brothers and sisters, each of which has to go to a different committee to be assembled into an omnibus housekeeping bill. And I have with me today Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of the Economic Development for the Council, Community Development. So basically this little cleanup bill, I'll just let you explain it.
Sure, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Lisa Barajas, Executive Director of Community Development at the Metropolitan Council. I am pleased to be here today. This bill is an administrative bill, really. The statute currently requires the council to distribute state operations and maintenance dollars to the parks implementing agencies. There are 10 of them in the metro area. And as part of that, statute requires the parks agencies to submit their budgets and previous year's actual expenditures by July 1st each year to the council. And then council staff are required to review all submissions by July 15th with initial payments distributed by August 1st. A proposed amendment to the statute would clarify that agency submissions from the previous year's actual expenditures to the most recent audited financial statements and modestly amend the timeline to allow for those required steps to be completed. The problem that we currently have with the statute is that there's an administrative disconnect between the work that we're being asked to do and the time that's allowed per statute to complete that work. With all of these timelines in practice, this means that council staff are requesting that agencies submit unaudited financials in advance of July 1st, and this makes the data potentially unreliable and inaccurate. And that timeline puts a great deal of pressure on council staff and parks implementing agency staff. Council staff are required to review an immense volume of data at tens of thousands of lines on an annual basis in a very short time in order to meet these statutory deadlines. The council's committee structure are also going through our Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission before to our full council really squeezes that time on all ends. So there really is no current practical way to review all that data with a degree of certainty or reliability that we're comfortable with. And we do have a documented methodology for how we do this work, given these time constraints. But I just want to make the point that the current law was written when our system was much smaller. The actual expenditures are much smaller than they are today. And now we're now that the system has grown to it where it is, and we are upwards of $120 million worth of expenditures on an annual basis to review those on a short timeline and look for duplicates and miscounts and all those types of things really is an audit risk that we prefer to avoid. And so that's why we have this proposed bill in front of you today. This proposed bill does not change anything about the funding formulas by which anything is distributed, just the process by which the timelines and then the type of data that we would be using to ensure that these inputs are reliable. So thank you.
Is there a question? Anyone in the audience who wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director, can you just let us know how often do you have an audit? Just looking at the language, the most recent audit, could that have been back in 2021,
22? Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lee.
Director Brajas.
All of our financials, each agency, just like when you close your books on an annual basis, that's the type of audited financials we're referring to. Mm-hmm. Right now, what we're receiving are the expenditures before each organization has actually closed their annual fiscal year books.
Assembly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Director, then it will be annually, so you have an audit annual. Thank you.
Representative Elkins, close.
It's a very simple bill, so we just want to move that along to state gov so it can meet up with its brethren.
I renew my motion that House File 1332 be recommended to be re-referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion prevails. Mm-hmm. Adopted.
Should we be taking this personally?
We'll keep moving. Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell, would you like to move House File 1498 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 1498 accomplishes a technical clarification that provides consistency between the state wetland bank and the actions eligible for mitigation credit contained in other parts of Minnesota Statute 103G, which include provisions allowing for the allocation of mitigation credits for upland buffers adjacent to restored wetlands, the restoration and protection of streams and riparian buffers, and the preservation of important watershed areas. The current Wetland Conservation Act, WCA rule, and associated statutes prescribed the Board of Water and Soil Resources Authority to establish and administer a state wetland banking system for wetland replacement credits associated with certain actions related to wetland restoration, creation, or preservation. House File 1498 is intended to allow the banking of additional types of water resources, for example, edges of lakes and streams, that may also be impacted by projects that would cause wetland loss. The ability to bank these resources would provide higher quality and more efficient mitigation. For example, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers regulates impacts to streams under the Federal Clean Water Act, but landowners and local governments have few, if any, stream mitigation options available to them. Enacting the authority specified in House File 1498 would allow the banking of stream mitigation that could then be utilized to satisfy the Corps' regulatory requirements. House File 1498 does not transfer any regulatory authority from other states, like the DNR, or federal, like the Army Corps agencies. It only provides a mechanism to provide high-quality, efficient mitigation options for impacts authorized by permits under those authorities. I have an expert on the topic with me who can identify himself for the record, and most questions he will be able to take.
Director Jashke, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. John Jaske, Executive Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. The author outlined the bill pretty well. I would say when we talked about it, the easiest way to do it was to draw a picture of it, honestly. But if you can imagine looking at a stream, for example, or a lakeshore, there's wetland areas that are on the periphery of these areas. And when a project comes along, most oftenly, you know, linear projects like road projects, you know, they're going to hit by widening that road some aspects of each of those pieces. And so rather than trying to divvy up what's the wetland area, what's the water area, we can allow this mechanism to accomplish the wetland mitigation and the water resource mitigation all in one fell swoop if those permitting authorities, as was mentioned, allow that and they're interested in that outcome as well.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify? Members, do you have any questions? Representative Purcell, any closing comments?
I guess the one bullet point that I failed to mention is that the statute change proposed in House File 1498 would become effective following rulemaking with the public engagement requirements of that process. That is all I have, Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 1498 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. The bill is laid over.
Next on our agenda is House File 1421, Chair Hansen bill. And Representative Hansen, would you like to move your bill?
I would move House File 1421 be sent to the Climate and Energy Policy and Finance Committee. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I believe you have the A1 author's amendment. Would you like to move the amendment and explain it?
Yes, I would move the A1 amendment. Members, 1421 is the result of a legislative audit on the petroleum tank release program. The A1 amendment takes into account some input we received from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency on a report, reporting timeline. And then also we received some input from the public on some technical corrections, which we have included in the A1 amendment. So I'd ask for your support.
Representative Hansen moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. And Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1421 relates to the petroleum tank release program. As I mentioned, it did pass the House last year. It requires the Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to improve performance of the agency's petroleum tank release cleanup program. I do have the legislative auditor here. If anyone has any questions about the audit, and I believe we have a testifier from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Yes. Thank you, Auditor Randall, for being here. If members have questions, but first on my list, I have Kirk Kadelka from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Come on down, Commissioner. Commissioner Kadelka, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and work on land issues. First off, I want to thank the author for the changes and the additional time to do the valuable work that the bill has out on our efforts to continuously improve the program. We responded to the audit and acknowledged a couple things that we would continue to move forward, and we are in the process of doing that. Some of these components and efforts are moving forward, but needed more time to do the work that needs to be done and still carry on the other items that the program needs to do, which is continuously taking in the sites that are coming in that are contaminated and be able to address them. Our staff are work tirelessly in this effort and are there to protect human health and the environment, but there's only so many hours in the day. So we are moving forward with a number of these items and appreciate the work. The one item we'd like to continue working with the author on is that last section on number item 5. And when we talked about this last time when the audit came up, just really want to highlight a little bit about the relationship of consultants, responsible parties, those who did the release, and the agency. I just want to make it very clear, when work is turned into the agency, whether it's by a responsible party and a consultant working on our behalf, if it does not match the quality that we need, our staff are there to reject the items, ask for more information so that we have the information to be able to make the decisions that we need. And it's true, and we agree with the OLA's report that when we get work that isn't fully complete or missing items, that adds time to it. What it doesn't do, though, is that it prevents things from being handled in the proper way. Where we see this issue, it's very hard sometimes to split the decision of a consultant or a contractor and the work that's being done by the responsible party and who's making those decisions. So what this does seems to say that every decision or paperwork that we come through is a direct reflection of the work of the contractor or consultant when it's not. An example is oftentimes a responsible party may tell the consultant, I only have X amount of budget to work on, or I'm not willing to go off my property to do the sampling that needs to be done. And so the plan that comes to us reflecting that is actually a decision of the responsible party and not the contractor. Or there are situations, and we know this to be true because we see contractors who work for one responsible party may have things missing that our staff then tell them they need to complete. But if they're doing the work for a different responsible party or us, they're more than capable and do that work. So what we'd like to have continuing conversations about is what are some other options that we can look at here to improve the work of our consultants and contractors. We've been doing some work to mine the information on when we have reports that are not satisfactory, looking at field audit data, maybe supply more training, have those types of ideas, and really focus and maybe tweak number five to be more like item number four, which talks about examining various options and reporting back to the legislature to move forward. So again, we're moving forward on these areas and we're updating MMB and the OLA on our progress on this, and we'll continue to do so under the bill or without the bill. We will continue to make improvements as outlined in the OLA. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner Kudelka. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify for or against the bill? We have the director of the OLA. Director Randall, Auditor Randall, please give me your correct title, state your name, and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Judy Randall. I'm the Legislative Auditor for the Office of the Legislative Auditor. Pleased to be here today before the snow really hits. And just want to thank Chair Hansen for taking the recommendations from our report and putting them into the bill. They are faithful to the report and the recommendations we made therein. I'm happy to answer any questions. Just in response to what Commissioner Kudelka just spoke about on number five, we do think that there needs to be some effort to make consultants more accountable. And so number five here talks about working with the Commissioner of Commerce to develop a system of measures and procedures by which to evaluate that work. And so if the consultant is only producing a certain amount of work because that's what the responsible party directed them to do, I think that could be reflected and part of the way to hold folks accountable. But I'm happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, you know, this bill does reflect a number of the recommendations that we made.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, we often deal with process. Minnesota is very good on process. But, you know, we want these sites to be cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And what is cleanup and how do we actually achieve that? And so when we have a legacy program, you know, something that was created a generation ago, it's important to look at how they, what these programs do, how do they work, how can they work better for Minnesotans, how can we achieve cleanup, you know, are we achieving that? And this is, you know, if folks don't realize this, I mean, every community used to have a gas station or multiple gas stations, and this was a program to go pull those tanks out. And you know, it's lots of money has been spent over many years on this, and is it working? And to try to have processes that make sure that there's an outcome where we have an effect of helping out Minnesota and the environment is where we want to be. So I think there's appreciate Auditor Randall being here because this is an important recommendation, and I think making sure if we are using consultants that we are having consultants that help us with actually achieving the goals of helping out our state and our environment and our water quality and our health.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. We're on member questions. Representative Finke, did you have a question?
No, I was just waving to our Republican.
Oh, okay. Hello. Hello to everyone. Next on my list is Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this bill forward. Auditor Randall, good to see you. Some of the questions I have makes a feel as I'm hearing this that some of the work that has been done in the past may not have identified the whole problem out there. And what I mean by that, it sounds like what I'm hearing is that some of the sites may have only been cleaned up to a certain point, and because they couldn't look any farther, that contamination may still be out there. Would this get to going back and relooking at areas? And the reason I'm asking this question is these are materials that are getting into our groundwater. Our aquifers are fractured in different areas, and as a result, that could get into the aquifers that are supplying drinking water elsewhere. And so I'd like to know a little bit more information, what is being looked at, what the recommendation, we're trying to address some of those type of problems that might be historical that are still sitting out there.
Auditor Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fisher. Thanks for the question. This bill addresses a couple of important areas related to cleanup. One is related to the definition of low risk. And so what happened before this bill, or what happens currently, and the agency may also be able to help weigh in here, is that sites that were deemed low risk didn't need to go through a mediation or mitigation process, but there wasn't a clear definition for what constituted low risk. And so there is some natural degradation of the petroleum that may leak. And so if it was deemed low risk, those sites were left to kind of naturally remediate. But again, since there wasn't a clear definition of what constitutes a low risk site, there are things that maybe weren't cleaned up that maybe should be if there is a more consistent definition of those sites. And then the other thing I wanted to point out is that the sites are remediated to the point based on their current use. So if it's an industrial site, it may be able to tolerate a larger amount of contamination if it's not near a waterway. If it seems like it's contained, then agency staff can determine, well, we don't need to take active remediation. But the way they handle it doesn't contemplate future use of that site, which, you know, could mean a development of a housing development in 10 years. And so then that site has been left to naturally remediate rather than be proactively cleaned up, and so those sites haven't necessarily been cleaned up as they should.
Commissioner Gadelka, you approached the desk. Do you have something to add?
Chair and committee members, I can talk a little bit more on these items. You know, as we continue to learn, as mentioned, the program has been around for a number of decades. We're incorporating new information into our guidance and continue to move forward. And sometimes that science and technology has changed. And the case is, for instance, with vapor intrusion. We knew about a decade ago, came up with the understanding that contamination in groundwater not only potentially impacts drinking water, but vapors that work into folks' basements like radon. Mm-hmm. So the agency is incorporated on the guidance, has that moving forward on how to handle that, and we created a look-back program. So we're about ready in the next few months here to put together a finalized report. But we went back and looked at sites that were highly susceptible potentially to vapor intrusion, looked at them, reopened them where needed, and were able to address any risks at that time. And so that, along with things such as lead additive, as science continues to evolve, we are having this program to go back and to be able to do that. And so that's one way that we're able to make sure that we're keeping up with the most recent science, and I think that was the question.
Great. Thank you. Further questions from members? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I'm just curious regarding point number five around the oversight. So right now, what kind of are consultants completing the work, and then are we reimbursing them, or are we providing the funding on the front end for the consultants to do the work that they need to do?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, the consultant is hired by the responsible party, and they do the funding. Now, they are eligible for reimbursement through the petrol fund up to 90% depending on the efforts. If there are things that are not done correctly, it's the agency will tell them additional work is needed, information that we need to be able to make a decision, or if their recommendations are ones we don't agree with, for instance, more cleanup is needed or other types of things, those things are, you know, our staff then make sure that is held accountable. The responsibility is on the responsible party, and they're held accountable to make sure that the public safety is addressed.
Chair Lee? Yeah. Questions for members? Representative Hansen, closing comments?
It's a good bill. I welcome any co-authors who would like to add on, make it a bipartisan bill, Representative Schultz. I'd ask for your support. I renew my motion that House File 1421, as amended, be referred to the Climate, Energy, and Policy Finance Committee, and ask for your support.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1421, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Climate and Energy Finance and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. And I will pass the gavel back to Chair Hansen.
For speed, you could take it. Keep going.
Representative Norris is here. Next up is House File 742. House File 742 received a full hearing with public testimony on Tuesday, January 31st of 2023. As we previously stated, the committee will be limited to amendments and final action. I will move that House File 742, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. And House File 742, as amended, is now back before the committee. And Representative Norris, I believe you have the A5 author's amendment. Can you explain it for our committee briefly?
I do, Chair Jordan. Members, it's great to be back with you in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. So a brief refresher and kind of help lay the groundwork for the A5 amendment. This bill aims to ban the use of PFAS in firefighting foam. My goal has been clear from the very start. These deadly chemicals should not be used in firefighting foam in Minnesota a day longer than absolutely necessary. Yet, I realize, as a legislature, we can't just always snap our fingers and make something happen. There are sometimes practical or logistical constraints that have to be overcome. That's why I've spent the past few weeks since this bill was first heard having extensive conversations with all the stakeholders. And I appreciate the respectful and constructive dialogue that we've engaged in. We've made some good progress, and that's reflected in this amendment. It grants discretion to the state fire marshal, based on a set of conditions, to determine when airports must transition away from the use of this foam, since they are currently required to use it by the federal government. The amendment includes the items that we were able to reach consensus on. No one got everything that they want, and there will be additional committee stops for this bill, and I've said that I'm open to continued conversations. In the last hearing on this bill, the issue of PFAS in firefighter turnout gear also came up. This amendment requires the MPCA, in cooperation with the Department of Health, to submit a report to this committee regarding PFAS and turnout gear by January 15, 2024. This report will cover turnout gear requirements and options for eliminating or reducing PFAS in turnout gear, current and future disposal methods for the gear, and recommendations and protocols for PFAS biomonitoring in firefighters. The amendment allows firefighters to voluntarily register for biomonitoring and appropriates $500,000 in one-time funding for this purpose. At the end of the day, we know these chemicals can have devastating health consequences. We have a responsibility to set Minnesota on a path to eliminating their use as rapidly as practically possible. And this amendment aims to set us down that track.
Great. I will move the A5 amendment to get the bill in the form that Representative Norris wants. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. The A5 amendment is adopted. Questions for members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Norris. I just have a couple questions for you here. Have you considered a way to address the possibility that there may not be enough of the new foam commercially available for all of those looking to make this transition? You know, we talk about military, refineries, airports, and many others that are looking to make this transition. So just to that question.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Jordan. Representative Schultz, yes, I have considered that. We're continuing to have conversations on that. I've indicated to the airports that that's one area where I think that there may be additional consensus that can be reached. You know, I've talked to some folks in the firefighting industry about, you know, challenges with supply chain and everything else. And so, you know, I think that there may be some additional work that can be achieved in that particular area.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Norris. We're appreciative that you're working with the stakeholders involved and encourage that there be assurances, especially if there are assurances that there will be enough available before the passage of this bill. And then, Madam Chair and Representative Norris, is there an agreed upon method for cleaning out fire trucks and fire suppression systems as we move forward on this bill?
Representative Norris.
Yeah. Chair Jordan, Representative Schultz, the airports and the firefighters are still waiting on some guidance related to that, and that's one of the things that this bill, the amendment sets up a process where the state fire marshal is going to be kind of overseeing this and is going to be, you know, determining when it is feasible for the airports to make a transition. As I indicated, the amendment language that we just adopted reflects what we've been able to reach consensus on so far. There are talks that are ongoing, and one of those is looking at, you know, guidance around how that decontamination process might occur.
Mm-hmm. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From your discussion so far, are you seeing that the trucks, that they'll become obsolete, the ones that are currently in use, or are we feeling that there's going to be a place where we're able to use the current trucks that we have?
Representative Norris.
Chair Jordan, Representative Schultz. I think that's to be determined. I think we're waiting for advice and guidance on that. I think certainly the hope is always that we can just, you know, decontaminate existing equipment or retrofit existing equipment and trucks so that we're not having to replace it entirely. But we'll have to see, you know, what the science guides us on that. We want to ultimately make sure that when we make this transition that we're not, you know, intentionally or unintentionally continuing to add PFAS to the environment or exposing our firefighters to those deadly chemicals.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my final question. So specifically thinking of, these are emergency situations, fire trucks, emergency situations. What information do we have that the new foam will work as well as the old foam, and maybe the need or the readiness that we'll have to have more foam available or to be used in order to put out a fire, mm-hmm. And especially knowing the urgency of these matters.
Yeah. Representative Norris.
Yeah, Chair Jordan, Representative Schultz, there is a lot of research out there right now that shows that there's some good substitutes available for this particular foam. The challenge in the airport context is that the federal government is still requiring the airports to use that PFAS-containing foam. I think what we should, you know, we should consider as we're looking at, you know, are we being prudent in how we advance this? I think we should take comfort in the fact that Minnesota is not stepping out on a ledge here by itself. There are 11 states that have 100% bans on PFAS-containing firefighting foam. Australia, Denmark, other countries have also taken this approach. So it's not like we're venturing into some uncertain territory here. This is something that other jurisdictions have looked at. They've concluded that it is in the interest of public safety and in the interest of public health to proceed with moving away from the PFAS-containing foam. And I think that it's reasonable for Minnesota to do so with the understanding that this amendment puts, you know, some protections in place by putting the state fire marshal in a position where there are conditions that the fire marshal has to look at, make sure that those are met, so that we can have a safe, orderly transition away as quickly as possible from the PFAS-containing foam.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris, for bringing this over. And so I'm really appreciate the appropriations that you have here for biomonitoring. My question to you is, you know, in referencing the other states, have you seen any of the other states that you have mentioned done any biomonitoring? Do we know what is the cost for us if we were to look at a certain amount of firefighters? I think my question leads to, you know, is this going to be enough or do we need to put more in?
Representative Norris.
Yeah. Chair Jordan, Chair Lee, Appreciate the question. It's one that to get into a lot of detail on, I'd probably have to phone a friend and get you some experts who know a little bit more about the biomonitoring piece than I do. But your point is well taken. We want to make sure that if we see significant demand from our firefighters for this, that we've got the resources available to make sure that every firefighter in Minnesota who needs this biomonitoring is able to get access to it, because it's going to be critical for their health and safety in the long run.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Chair Jordan, and thank you, Representative Norris. I really appreciate this, like I mentioned before, and I just hope that as we move along in the process, whether that's just for this appropriations or going into the future, that we consider putting more. And I'm hopeful that as you make your way through the committee process and to the Committee for Health, that they will consider adding more on top of this so that we could address PFAS and all of our firefighters throughout the entire state. Thank you.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a technical question. I see that we adopted the A5 amendment, but we also have an A1 amendment. Is that from the January 31st?
Yes, Representative Purcell, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris. This, thank you for working to solve this to some extent. I think there are a lot of unknowns, but I think we have to really go to the fact of our firefighters are getting sick. They're getting cancer. Their loved ones are having fertility struggles. I mean, I could sit here and name the many of issues that we're having with firefighters. And that's a problem. That's a problem. And I'll look forward to seeing the Department of Defense's foam. I think it's a great idea to put the fire marshal in front of this right now. I just hope that we do act with speed and that there's ways to really push, because the EPA has done, at least from what I've looked, 1,000 different studies. There's no question that this is a bad chemical that's harming people. And so thank you for your work on this. I appreciate it. Mr. Chair, is Tony Quillis here? I'm just kidding.
I don't believe so, Representative Edelson. You can take that offline. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quickly to the author, I have two questions. The first question is, we're looking at biomonitoring in firefighters. Can we also expand that to include veterans? Because a lot of veterans have also been exposed to this during their time of service, either abroad or here stateside.
Representative Norris.
Chair Jordan, Representative Brand, I think it's a great idea. I think, you know, part of that will be the chair's discretion in terms of looking at his target and what we can do with the resources available. But, you know, certainly when you think about, you know, the people we should be focused on and protecting and supporting in our state, our veterans are right up there next to our firefighters. So I certainly would be supportive of that.
Representative Brand.
Madam Chair, one other thing for the bill author to consider as well is there are a lot of fire departments who are very small, and as a result, a lot of firefighters don't actually shower out until they get home, and they're bringing their clothing that they showed up to the fire with home as well, and that enters a family washing machine and dryer and that sort of thing. I'd also like to have you consider at least family members of firefighters as well.
Great. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to accentuate the point that Representative Brand just made, and I've heard from the firefighters in my district concerned with the chemicals from the fires, and these are worthy conversations to have. So thank you, Representative Brand, for recognizing that.
Further discussion to the bill as amended by the A1 and A5 amendments? Representative Norris, final comments.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair Jordan. Thanks to the members. Appreciate the discussion. Appreciate the questions from Representative Schultz, who's doing yeoman's work over here for his caucus. And, you know, these are important questions that we're still wrestling with. And I think, as I said, there's going to be future committee stops for this bill. I think there's some room to continue to work around the edges on it. But I think, you know, broadly speaking, I'll reiterate my objective again, which is to eliminate the use of this PFAS foam as quickly quickly and rapidly as possible, given the damaging health effects that we know it can have and the damaging effects to the environment. And I think this amendment we adopted today is another step forward toward getting us toward that goal.
Thank you. With that, I renew my motion that House File 742, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Members, we are not meeting for the rest of this week due to the snow, but I am sure that Representative Hansen and Mr. Strohmeyer will be in conversation about next steps. Mr. Chair, do you have anything to add?
So we have not looked at next week. We will probably have, you know, we haven't looked at the exact bills, but tentatively maybe having the PCA on Tuesday with Representative Edelson's bill as well. And then Wednesday having a very full schedule, tentative right now. Now that is subject to change as well, but that's kind of what we're looking at. We do not have much more time to hear bills, and we've got to get the two big agencies in plus a lot of bills. So that's the tentative schedule for the board.
Representative Hansen.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, especially as a freshman member of the body, and I know we have several of them here around the table, I know that understanding the agency budgets and other things is a priority, and I'd certainly like to see us have a better, more full understanding and to that point, which I believe you've heard about.
That's why we had hoped to have the PCA tomorrow, but we have snow, so we'll try to have them on Tuesday.
And members, with that, drive safe, be careful, shovel your sidewalks, and we're adjourned.